communicator, Stephen Ward.
Sound was recorded on October the 12th, 1964, medium wavelength.
Mystery.
Yes.
Which, to some extent, I suppose, will remain a mystery for a very long time. That is, if one can appreciate the fact that time does enter into things here.
Yes.
Although, in a sense, of course, there again, it's not as you understand it. But I've come to the conclusion that all life is a condition of consciousness.
Yes.
On certain planes of existence. And what one may be conscious of in one plane becomes a reality, becomes a life. And then it seems that one drifts into a form of unconsciousness to wake or to become aware of a new condition or a new life or new plane of thought and consciousness. In other words, it seems to me that it's the only explanation, as far as I'm able to understand it, of life and continuous existence. It seems to me that there are obviously many, 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 many planes or conditions of consciousness. But whereas one may have a knowledge and a realization of a certain plane of existence because you happen to be in consciousness with it, as it were, these other planes are outside your consciousness,
yes.
But they exist nevertheless. It's the same in a sense in your world, the average person. They only know that plane, the earth, of conscious reality, conscious living, and they know at the same time that eventually the time will come when they will cease to have consciousness of it, or at least that is what they assume, that they will, in other words, die.
Yes.
What happens after that, either they're not interested, or they're afraid to try and find out, or for some reason or the other, they're not able to comprehend it. But the point is this, that it's obviously all life are forms or stratas of reality and consciousness. It only becomes a reality when you yourself become part of it and are conscious of it. And so it seems to me that there are all these different degrees, and even in one plane or on one sphere of activity of life, one has a consciousness of so much. But as one obviously delves further and in consequence progresses, so on that particular sphere or plane, that which was invisible previously becomes visible and becomes therefore conscious to you. I found it most fascinating.
I expect you have had several experiences about that, Stephen.
Well, I mean, for instance, when I first came here,
yes.
It was as if I was in a conscious state between, I suppose you could say it was between, and yet, in a sense, it wasn't, because I was conscious of the earth and much that was going on there,
yes.
And conscious of this new existence. It was as if the two worlds were merging and yet not becoming one. It was most extraordinary. I would sort of be aware of things that people were saying, things that they were doing on your side,
yes.
And yet have a realization of something else happening at the same time around me. First of all, it wasn't the consciousness of people so much, that is, visibly, but a consciousness of their thoughts, I suppose it must have been, which seemed a reality in as much as I could hear. It is as if I was sort of being pulled two ways,
yes.
And trying to sort of sort myself out. It was the most extraordinary mess in a way. It was irritating in a sense, because I felt as if I didn't belong to either world.
Mm, yes. It must have been very, very puzzling to you, because it seems to me that you must have been listening to the earth and at the same time hearing a little further from the earth.
But I realize now, of course, that it's not an uncommon thing for people on your side, particularly if they're very seriously ill or near death's door, for them to have a consciousness, not only of the people that they know that are still on earth and maybe around their bedside, but also a realization and consciousness of people whom they have known in the past and have gone on before them, who have come obviously to help them at that particular moment of passing. In other words, they sometimes even see them.
Yes. Oh yes, I've read.
And the extraordinary thing is that they appear to see them with the eyes of the body, but really what it is that their consciousness of things outside your world has become much more acute.
Yes.
And the brain is receiving the messages from the individuals concerned on this side, and that is transporting those thoughts into picturization. It's the most extraordinary thing. I realize now that in a sense that's how I must have been, and possibly just before I passed over, it was as if, quite obviously, I was in the body and yet outside it.
Yes.
I was in the body from the point of view that I hadn't left the earth.
Yes.
But I had a consciousness of things going on around and about me, not necessarily seeing, but sensing and hearing and becoming aware of. It was an extraordinary state of being when I first realized that I was dead. It was a sort of feeling as if I was drifting between the two worlds. One moment I'd be conscious of the earth, the next second perhaps I'd be conscious of people on this side who were trying to reach me, and also places that I could dimly see. It was as if something was beckoning me also. I didn't mean only people, but it was a sense of something which was dynamically powerful, that was like a magnet in a sense, that was drawing me. It was as if I was being pulled away from the earth. I realize now more or less that it was a concentrated thought of the people who were trying to help me, trying to lift me up and sort of bring me away from the thoughts and the conditions which were still very strong within me, and also the thought force of obviously many people on earth who were reading about me and thinking about me and what had happened. And it was the most extraordinary sensation, and I believe that with people, for instance, who are very famous, people who whose names are household words. I mean, you get someone like, say, King George V, for argument's sake, or some great personality, when they die, and thousands of people are thinking about their personality, thinking about his life, for instance, and what they've read about him, what they've heard about him, or if they knew him, past thoughts in regard to the life that has been dead and so on. In other words, the concentration of thought from thousands, possibly millions of people upon one person is so strong that in a sense, although all those people may be wishing the individual well in their new life, that is if they believe in an afterlife, or thinking of this person in a kindly way, in some strange way it's like a magnet that pulls them to the earth. And then of course you have people on this side who are there to help the individual over and to welcome the individual over, who are also pulling too. But the terrific thought force emanating from the earth to a person who's only just probably a few days or so passed over is so tremendous that many individuals for a time are in a state of being earthbound.
Yes, a state of uncertainty.
I think once,
where you are and so on.
I think once the funeral part is over, once the person has, as it were, physically been put to rest, then I think it's easier. It certainly is, I think, for most people to release themselves gradually. It's that tensed up emotion and the thought force of untold numbers of people that can and do hold a person to us for perhaps a week or two, or probably longer in some instances, especially if the person was very materialistic. And that's always much more difficult. If the person is 100%, you might say, materialist, thinking only material things and never concerned with anything else but that, it's often difficult for that person to release themselves. In fact, a great deal of effort is made by people on this side to help. Actually, I found it very intriguing and interesting, because I have been with groups of souls from this side who've gone particularly to individuals whose needs have been very great in regard regard to their passing over and helping if I could, and they seem to think, some of them here, that because I myself, in some senses, are nearer the earth, I suppose that's partly because I haven't been here so very long, and because I'm in the habit of coming back to speak, and that also has something to do with it. In other words, I'm so in touch with the earth, and yet not materialistic, of course, I'm able to help some of these people better perhaps than some who are in a sense much more highly advanced, but who in a sense haven't the strong link with the earth, or haven't this sort of power in a sense to sort of contend with it so well. It's all very intriguing to me. I never thought, for instance, that I'd ever do anything like this. I mean, I feel that in a sense there's so much I've got to learn, and I wouldn't say I would need to be rescued now, but I can see now that I'm playing some part in the scheme of things by doing that, but that's only one aspect of my life. It's terribly interesting, and I love it. I love being with people. I love helping people, of course. Yes. And as I think I told you last time, I think it must have been, I'm tremendously interested in the animals.
Oh, yes.
But Mickey, I think, was quite illuminating too about the animals.
Yes.
He's a great love.
So that was a wonderful speech of yours. Like, we all have
I feel that we have so much indebtedness, although mankind doesn't realize it, but it is true.
Yes.
That mankind owes a great deal to the animal kingdom, far more than he realizes, far more than he imagines. One doesn't want, in a sense, perhaps to talk about certain aspects of it, but mankind has for so long depended on the animal kingdom and yet treated it so badly.
Oh, I think that things
will return, go on. I regret to say I've feared it will for some time yet. Goodness knows if ever there will come the day when humanity will really become aware of its obligations. And I don't mean just material ones, I mean spiritual ones. I mean, we have an obligation not only to each other, but we have an obligation to the whole of nature. Some people just treat nature so badly, and yet nature still goes on producing and dying and coming back again. I mean, you see it every year. You see the product of nature. You see nature's efforts, and you see what nature brings forth for the good of humanity. And yet nature is so constant, and man is so constantly cruel to nature.
Mm-hmm.
Nature, when it's left alone, as it should be quite often anyway, can produce and does do some remarkable things. Actually, a lot of the sickness and the illness in your world is due to the chemicals, for instance, that are being sown, that are being put into the ground, that are creating all sorts of things, which, bad enough as they are now, will be much worse in another 20, 30 years or more's time. I don't think people realize that you can't tamper with nature. You can't interfere to that extent with nature without nature itself rebelling or having a reactive...
All these things, do they affect you on your side?
Well, I wouldn't say they exactly affect us. In a sense, they can't affect us, and yet in a sense, of course, they must. Because mentally, we are very conscious of the fact that, well, all these things are happening, and it's bad for the human race, it's bad for the peoples of the earth, and of course in time, as I said, it will have a very detrimental effect mentally. Now, I don't think people even realize this. They think about physical things, but they don't even realize that so much of these things which are being put into the ground and being put into plant life and even into the animal kingdom and in so many different ways, all these things are eventually going to have a very bad effect, and it will be of a mental nature, quite apart from a purely physical one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think people realize that they are poisoning their systems gradually. It's a very slow process, of course, but it will get worse, it won't get better. And I don't think that the scientists, for instance, realize what harm they are doing, too, in their own direction. A lot of things are happening which are not at the moment showing any particularly bad effects, But there's no doubt about it that the pollution of the atmosphere and the radiation and other things which even science itself doesn't yet understand are going to and will have very bad effects.
Well, scientists already know the effect that these things have on the human being.
Strontium and all that. You see, at the moment, how can I put it? It's like a sort of heavy vapour, and this is not even a very good description, but it's in a sense applicable, hanging over certain parts of the earth. And it moves and it floods, and it will get lower, until it becomes part of your air.
Yes.
You see, and this, if it were to go on, I mean, if it were to be allowed to develop, for instance, if there were more of these atomic explosions or experiments, all this which is going to the atmosphere is eventually going to fall various places.
Yes.
And you will have, and I'll stake my life on this, that a little later on, there will be some extraordinary things in nature which will surprise and disgust mankind. But it's all the byproduct and the offshoot of many of these things that are happening, and not only by what science is doing in the way of atomic explosion and that sort of thing, but also the chemicals that are being used, for instance, with growing of vegetables.
Yes.
And all this is pollution, and it gets into the physical material system of the body, and after a time it will set up, and there's no doubt about this, it will set up certain diseases, not only with humans, of course, with the animals. I mean, many of the animals that are needing to eat off the land, feeding from these crops, they will have it too. Mm. I know it's a dreadful thought, but it's true enough, and it appalls me that nothing is done about it.
No, and they know it. They know the effect that it is having on human beings and look what they're doing with the animals today.
But of course there's so many things happening which I never knew about, of course, when I was on your side, and quite frankly I suppose I didn't really think too deeply about it, more than most people do. But it seems to me that sooner or later it's going to catch up with man. You just cannot ill-treat, you cannot do these things to nature without nature itself reacting, and mankind will in consequence suffer. One doesn't want to be a pessimist, and I suppose in a sense I must sound like one, but it does seem to me that sooner or later something will have to happen. Goodness knows it's bad enough now, but what it could be like if it were allowed to continue in another 20, 30 years or even less, assuming that is that man doesn't blow himself to bits, the whole atmosphere of the earth, if only you could see it as we see it, is terrible. It's something which I couldn't even begin to describe to you. Even I've seen it myself. The short time I've been here, I've seen these areas, the only way I can put this, areas of, I suppose, depression is not the word to use, and yet it is a form of depression, but you see everything that has life has got within itself the ability to throw out all sorts of conscious thoughts. And this applies just as much in some senses to the animal kingdom as it does to the human.
Yes.
You see, mankind has for centuries, ever since goodness knows when, and even worse matter years, treated the animal kingdom. Now he's treating the other kingdoms, the vegetable kingdom, for instance, and other forms of life, so badly that all these things will have an effect, and the thought force, quite apart from anything else, which is around your earth, and it's not only coming from some human beings of a low order, but it's also coming from animals. I know this may sound crazy to people, but It is an extraordinary thing that everything that has life has consciousness of some degree or other, sometimes agreed that it's of a very low power, a very low order, it's not very powerful in itself, but the higher you go up the scale, the more intensity there is and the more power there is behind it. I don't want you to think that by this that there is a dreadful army of evil around the earth from this side.
No.
I don't mean that exactly, but what I'm trying to say is this, that the thoughts of man, and sometimes his thoughtlessness too, can create and does create an atmosphere which around the world, which is heavy and very difficult, for instance for us, to pierce. I think the miracle is, and I realize this more and more and more, the miracle is that people from this side who've advanced at all are able to get through, to communicate, for instance, or make their presence felt, or influence in other ways as they do, even people who perhaps have no knowledge or realization of this subject. The endeavor, the intensity of thought that emanates from people on this side trying to pierce the conditions around your earth is amazing. I think it's an absolute miracle that there is this wonderful form of communication or any other form of communication. I can quite see now that if one were to go back thousands of years, although man in some senses, it's true, hadn't progressed, in other senses he was still very much a man of nature. He was still very much a child of God, very much a child of nature. He may in some senses have been illiterate and ignorant, and certainly had none of the benefits, many of the benefits as you have of today, but nevertheless he did live. In a sense, with nature, and appreciated nature, and he understood to a great extent its laws and obeyed those laws. But man today is not are not concerned with the laws of nature, they're not concerned with the laws of God. Man's only concerned with himself. He's become more and more materialistic, more and more concerned with himself in every sense materially, that really he's losing touch. Seems to me that man has lost touch more and more over the centuries. It is an extraordinary thing how here, of course, as one can see, the past. It's readable. It's like being able to read a book that is visual, to be able to see the changes and the many things that have transpired at different ages, different times, and here and there you see individuals who, by their very nature and their very effort, have made a tremendous impact and a mark upon their time, but because they had the realization of all that was good within themselves, they in consequence were made the scapegoats, and they were made unhappy individuals, and they were made to suffer. You see, the herd instinct is so strong, and although in the old days, in the ancient days, you had this herd instinct too, one must admit that it wasn't the same kind of herd instinct that you have today. A man had to, of course, concern himself with his being able to exist in what was then, in many senses, a difficult world, but nevertheless, he was content, much more content,
yes,
than man is today. There's no contentment in man today. There's always the wanting this or wanting that, never being satisfied, never being happy. But there was a time when man was content, was happy, he was happy with nature, he was happy with the ordinary things, the routine things of his life and his family, and in other words, he lived to nature and with nature. And there wasn't even a fear of death in his makeup as there is today. He understood it, he realized that it was necessary to die, to live. It's an extraordinary thing how man, in spite of his tremendous progress scientifically in many ways, sometimes quite often for the good, true, but at the same time he's gone so far away from the original idea, the original conception of what life should be and what life is.
Well, I think mostly it was due to these scientists, not only on the earth, but many of them on
earth. Well, I think a lot of them, of course.
They
They have no consideration.
That's it.
Science has become their god, and as long as they can carry out their experiments, they're so engrossed in those that they don't, even if they do, think about what the consequences might be for others. It doesn't worry them to that extent. That is their god, and that is their purpose of life, as far as they see it.
On both sides, you know, Stephen.
We mean scientists on this side?
Yes.
Well, I suppose there could well be. I mean, I haven't really met any scientists on this side that would do anything, as far as I know, that would be detrimental to the human race or for the good of humanity. Of course, there may well be.
They're so keen to progress on that side that I'm sure they impress and send out thoughts to the scientists on the Earth.
Well, I suppose it is true that there are people on this side who are interested in the scientific aspect and are interested in science to the point of view of helping scientists on your side, but in what degree or in what way? I wouldn't like to think that there were scientists on this side that were helping scientists on yours for ulterior motives or for the destruction of the human race.
That may not be, but they're too eager and to get the scientific impression.
Well, I know one thing. I know that there are certain peoples on this side of a scientific turn of mind or scientific desiring who are trying to help people on your side to find a method of communication between our world and yours, which, if we could do it and prove it scientifically, could possibly, I think, then lead people away from many of the things which today cause them so much unhappiness. But goodness knows if they've never come. It has been prophesied, and I myself, I think, may have mentioned it, but one hears of this and one knows of it going on, but how soon or how or when it could be, I really don't know. But it does seem to me that the whole tragedy of life is that everyone seems to be running here, there and everywhere and getting nowhere, because all the time they're running around in a sort of circle, concerned only with the things which they can see and touch and have, rather than the things which within themselves they should realize are the essential things. They're concerned with the things of the moment, which they know in their hearts as they seek for them and find them when their fortunes, they think, must be left behind anyway. It all seems such a tragedy to me. I know that in a sense I was as bad as the rest when I was there, so it's easy for me to talk like this, but seeing things as I do now with a greater vision and a greater realization, it all seems to me that so many are, most, the vast majority of people are concerned with foolishness and selfishness.
That's it.
It's a tragedy, because as we see into your world, there's so much sadness, so much unhappiness, so much sorrow, so much misery, so much poverty, that as we see it, it's all so tragic and so sad. And there are so many who are so fortunate, at least fortunate from the material point of view as they think, but even then it doesn't bring them happiness. They don't know how to live, they don't know how to really find truth and happiness. Everyone seems to be rushing after what someone else has, and then if they get it, they don't really want it. Years and donkey's years ago, when I was quite a kid, I remember vividly being fascinated watching hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of ants all rushing around like mad. And of course one knows that they had a plan. Extraordinary how such little tiny creatures could have such tremendous sort of patience and knowledge. There's no doubt about it, in the tiniest land, there's brains, there's intelligence. The whole of life is so amazing and so fascinating that when you think that an army of ants can do the things that they do, and how they protect each other and work for each other.
I know, but
work
how
for the
is
community.
That, Stephen? Can you explain that to me? I didn't say they have no intelligence. It must be.
But they have an intelligence of their own, in their own sort of way of life. You see, then I think what is so important for humanity to remember, that everything on its different strata has a form of intelligence or awareness, consciousness, condition of life of its own.
Okay.
A man mustn't think that he is the only creature that has intelligence, the only creature that has the right to live beyond death, for instance. I mean, that's another fallacy built up chiefly by the church, I suppose, or the different religious organizations, that this promise that when you die, because you are a human being, because you have accepted certain religious facts or beliefs, that you will live, is so hypocritical in a sense, because although we all know that human beings do live beyond death, not necessarily the way the church thinks, for instance, but why should man consider that he's the only individual, the only person, or the only form of life that should have a life beyond death? After all, what constitutes life is the contribution that all parts of nature plays to, in the whole scheme of things. We may look down upon a certain little ant, or we may look down upon some other form of life, but it plays a very important part. It fits in. It may be of a low order, but it does not mean to say that it has to be destroyed or that it's necessarily bad. In fact, most things which humanity considers bad are quite often fundamentally good. That is the whole scheme of life, it seems to me. I mean, I think nature therefore teaches us a lesson, if we have the sense to see it, that what we consider lowly or unimportant or perhaps even bad or evil, even as the world sees it, isn't necessarily so.
But it is, Stephen. I mean to say, on the earth, for instance, there are many things that can kill a man. Snakes, for instance, insects that attack you.
Well, I'm not suggesting that don't swat a few flies. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not suggesting that certain lower forms of animal life haven't sometimes to be avoided, or they haven't to be held back or suppressed. But what I think is that it seems to me, anyway, that every aspect or form of life that has life, in some part, in some way, has some meaning, some purpose. It may not necessarily always be for good, but at the same time, it's there, and it's been brought into being. And I think, too, that there may be things brought into being which man himself, in his ignorance and foolishness over perhaps centuries of time and wrong thinking, has himself brought into being. I don't necessarily mean to say that everything that exists was necessarily ordained or created by some superintelligence. It seems to me, when you consider, after all, so now I think we have to get down to fundamentals here. I mean, it's not just, I mean, we're concerned, fundamentally anyway, with the things of the spirit, with the things of the mind, that part of man which is indestructible, which is permanent, shall we put it like that?
Yes.
But then again, if we look upon all forms of life in its actual state, I think we should see and realize that it has a part to play. Now, you take man himself, the body that he's so proud of, and his looks, and heaven knows what else that humanity flatters itself about. But we know that fundamentally it is made up of all sorts of things which, if one could realize it, if one really understood it, would make one disgusted. You see, we know that the physical body is composed of all sorts of microbes and all sorts of things, which, when you analyze it, sounds revolting. In other words, what is material and what is physical has its important part to play in the scheme of things, whether it is an ant or whether it is a human body. But we all know that fundamentally it must fall back to its original state. It must go back from whence it came. It has no sort of validity or solidity or reality in a mental and a spiritual sense. Whatever it is, whatever shape it may take, or whatever it may be composed of, that in itself isn't the important thing. It is what is rooted deep within it that matters. It is that awareness, that consciousness, that sort of personality, that spiritual faculty or part of oneself which overcomes and overrides all the material aspect. You see, I think man makes too much of himself. He looks all the time looks to himself. He looks to himself as a material, physical, human being. But he cannot see, or even if he does know, he doesn't want to see, he doesn't like to think of himself in that sense as he really is. What he should consider and what he should think about, which he doesn't, is not the permanency of the material, but the permanency of the mental and the spiritual. That the body is merely a vehicle which is composed and taken from the earth, and yes. Then it will return. All forms of life come from earth, but the mind, the fundamental spiritual force or power, the very life itself, the essence, that is mental and spiritual, that is the permanent, the part of man which can never die. It is the creative part. The physical is merely the physical, which is for the time being. It is the known part of man, not the reality. It is a shell. It's not, yes. It's not the curl.
Yes. Oh, there's much in nature that baffles one.
Of course there's yes. much in nature that baffles one. There must be much in nature that baffles one. There are many things that one doesn't understand and probably will never understand. But it doesn't alter the fact that all forms of existence, even if they're unpleasant forms of existence, even if they're disgusting forms of existence, in some shape or measure or way, they have a part to play. But as man progresses, I think that if man were to progress mentally and spiritually, many of the things which are unpleasant, not only in his life and in his mind, but in a physical sense, would eventually cease. I think man himself has created certain aspects of life which are unpleasant. I think disease, now you take disease.
Yes.
That is what man himself, over centuries of wrong thinking and wrong living, has brought into being. There's no doubt in my mind about that. Mm-hmm. I'm quite sure that in the early stages of evolution, there was no
disease. The difficulty is that man does not know. He's not shown the right way to live, to prevent disease and all that.
Well, in some senses, of course, you can say that man is learning how to protect himself against these diseases, and that some diseases, of course, have, to some extent, more or less disappeared. That's true. Science, to some extent, has contributed a great deal in that direction. But it doesn't alter the fact that it looks as if things could go in a sort of full circle. I think that quite feasibly, centuries upon centuries and centuries ago, some of the diseases that you have now didn't exist, but man himself has brought them into being. This may not be a popular theory or an argument, and probably some people would object to it and say it's not a balderdash, and I'm quite prepared to stand corrected, but it does seem to me that it's more than feasible that much of the ills of the world, whether it's physical disease or in the various forms of life that you find in your world, could have sprung through man's, if you like, you put it, ignorance.
Ignorance.
But at the same time, also man's foolishness, because often man isn't ignorant on certain things, but it's just sheer, well,
yes.
self-centered and foolish and couldn't care less attitude. I know that some of these things cannot be fully explained, and I don't make excuses for worms and maggots.
Oh,
but at the same time, those things,
the
whole world is full
of
it. Which is another point I should have thought that would make people realize and think that the earth life is a transitory thing. In a sense, of course, we know it goes on, and it goes through changed forms of evolution and development and so on. But the point is that from the point of view of man's intelligence, the point of view of man's spirit, the earth world is merely a shell and a vehicle for man to express himself for a given time.
Yes.
But once man is outside that limited time and enters into a higher sphere or plane of being, and his thoughts change accordingly, and he adjusts himself to the new vibrations and conditions of a new life, then of course things do vary and change and differ. But man just goes on and on and on. And he very seldom thinks otherwise than what his forebears did in regard to fundamental things. It seems to me that man has got to get rid of so many of the old hypocrisies. He's got to live a cleaner, mentally and spiritual life. He's got to adjust himself to a great extent to the changes which take place, which are constantly, in a sense, taking place, not to just blindly accept things, but also to try and change things where necessary. Certainly change his outlook and his attitude towards his fellow man and towards the animal kingdom, and to realize that the animal kingdom has contributed a great deal to man's advancement, more than man realizes. In fact, the animal kingdom has often been sacrificed to man's advantage.
Oh, I should think so.
Oh, it's all a tremendous Even so, no matter what I say to you, darling, it's going to be still a big mystery in some senses. I can't help it. Maggots or no maggots. Anyway, I must go. God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you very, very much for
coming. See you again on Thursday. Yeah.